Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Pomp and Circumstance, the familiar tune, one you've no doubt heard too many times, though the one time it pertains to you or your kid, it makes you cry anyway. But lately, some very prominent journalists, economists, and educators are listening a little more closely and hearing something new. Under the French horns and the swelling strings, many are hearing popping. What is it? Could it be the sound of a college bubble bursting before our eyes and ears? You may have noticed this meme. Prominent pieces in the Chronicle of Higher Education, the New York Times, New York Magazine, and elsewhere, questioning the value of college. Recent studies show that kids these days are studying less and less when in school, and even the co-founder of PayPal is paying promising young students not to go to college after they graduate high school. Well, Anya Kamenetz is not buying it, not entirely at least. Anya is a senior writer for Fast Company magazine, a syndicated columnist who writes about money issues, and the author of two books on the economics of college and recent grads, Generation Debt and DIYU. Hey, Anya, welcome back to WNYC.
Hey, Brian. Thanks for having me.
So here's the case as laid out in all these recent articles, and I know you're somewhat of a skeptic, but take the classic hallmarks of a bubble and then apply it to college. Hyperinflated prices? Check. Over the past quarter century, the total cost of higher education has grown by 440%. Investments by ignorant consumers funded largely by debt? Check. The New York Times recently reported that college loan debt has surpassed credit card debt. Widespread faith in increasing returns. Check. That PayPal co-founder Peter Thiel has questioned the data that shows significant earnings gaps between those workers who have college degrees and those who don't. He thinks you can close that gap by entering the workforce and getting a four-year head start for many people. So what say you? Some of that sounds like a bubble.
Well, you know, first of all, I think it's important to realize that anytime we're living through an economic downturn like this, that people are going to start questioning the value of higher education. There was a very similar, you know, range of meme and criticism of higher education in the 1970s, and there's actually a best-selling book called The Case Against College. But there are some really, and I've been looking at this for a long time, you know, I've been studying, covering higher education debt since 2004, and I don't think it's exactly the same as the mortgage crisis, and there's a couple of reasons why. The most important reason is you can't flip a college education. You know, on a basic economic level, you cannot walk away from your college education, and because of legislation that we have, it's very, very difficult to walk away from the debt. So the chances that, you know, and it's a terrible situation that we have, you know, three-quarters of $1 trillion in outstanding student loan debt. It's an albatross around the neck of many, many students. But the fact is that they're not going to discharge that debt in bankruptcy, and so it is very unlikely to ripple outward and affect the wider economy in the way that the mortgage crisis did.
This has been one of your areas, though, since you wrote the book Generation Debt. Obviously, the debt, the accumulated debt that college students have after school. What's been the effect of the Great Recession on this problem? Because prices have continued to increase for a college education, even as there are fewer and fewer well-paying jobs for recent grads.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I want to make clear that I think this is a really valuable debate to be having. I just don't think the outcome of it is going to be, you know, a wholesale divesting from higher education. Basically, what's happened is that college is less of a good deal than it used to be. The relative advantage of a college degree has gotten smaller because there are fewer college graduates that are able to find jobs that actually require a college degree. Right now, of recent grads, about a fifth of them are unemployed. About another fifth are employed in jobs that do not require a college degree. And then only half of them are in jobs that actually need that degree. So you can see that the relative advantage is lower as well as the debt being higher at the same time. And so college is less of a good deal than it used to be. It doesn't mean that it's something that you can walk away from or decide not to opt into.
So listeners, Here's the question for you, and we definitely want your voices in this discussion. In particular, let's hear from folks who graduated sometime between 8 and 12 years ago. Can we go in that range? If you were, you know, class of 2003 back to about class of 99, is college a bubble? Let's take a purely economic approach to this and talk about ROI, the return on investment. Is it sustainable? Call in with your college ROI story, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post to our comments page, WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr Show. According to New York Magazine, in the past 30 years, private college tuition and fees have increased from $9,500 a year to more than $27,000. Public college tuition has increased also. Obviously, it's not as high, but it's increasing at about the same rate, tripling or so, from $2,100 to $7,600, more than tripling. 15 years ago, the average student debt at graduation was around $12,000. In 2009, it was around $24,000. So, Anya, do you think of college lenders as acting in the same hyperinflated way that housing lenders behaved in the run-up to the housing collapse? N Plus One Mag recently ran a piece which mentions the student loan asset-backed securities, a.k.a. SLABs. These are secondary market trades linked to the student loan industry. Sound familiar? Sounds a lot like mortgage-backed securities.
And the difference between the student loan market and the mortgage market is that the federal government has swiftly stepped in and actually taken over the entire federal student loan market. So now all we have is direct loans. We no longer have a secondary market. We no longer have asset-backed securities. Sallie Mae has gone from being a provider of student loans to merely being a servicer of student loans. And so what we had actually was a massive bailout of the student loan industry, which forestalled the idea that there's going to be more inflation in the market, and in fact, it brought a little bit of correction into the market. Now, you still have a private student loan market, but having seen that default rates are rising, you have private lenders who are being much more cautious in who they're lending to and requiring co-signers. So from a purely economic point of view, and that doesn't, you know, that's leaving aside the question of what the value of that degree is or whether that debt is scrupulous, but from a purely economic point of view, we had a massive bailout of the student loan market before the crisis came.
I'm not sure if you heard our segment on housing with David Leonhardt last hour, but he actually drew an analogy to higher education. Here's what he had to say about this return on investment question.
The fact is that the ratio of the pay of college graduates to non-college graduates is higher than it's ever been. College graduates are suffering, but not as much as everyone else. Mm-hmm. That is an investment that has a fabulous long-term economic payoff for most people.
So, Anya, realizing that you agree with him, that the earning power of a college grad is still way higher than that of a high school grad. Where is this meme coming from? Why are there articles in the Journal of Higher Education and the Times and New York Magazine and that book that you referred to if it's so obviously true that you need a college degree to, you know, thrive in this competitive world, then why are so many people saying, no, I'm not so sure?
Because people are fed up. They're fed up with paying whatever institutions decide to charge. They're especially fed up with the growth, I think, in the private college market because private colleges have had a lot of impunity to basically charge whatever they want in exchange for, you know, an ersatz Ivy League experience. And, you know, there's a lot of hucksterism in the higher education market, I think, across the board. And despite the fact that there's a basic value there, on average, there's a lot of people, first of all, that fall outside of those averages. And I think that the skepticism is coming because the relative value has declined, even if a basic value is still there. So people are starting to see that the promises have maybe outrun the actual fulfillment, and that's why people are feeling really disappointed.
Let's take a call. Phil in Long Island City. You're on WNYC. Hi, Phil.
Hey, how are you today?
Good.
Well, I graduated in 2002. I went to those liberal arts colleges that at that point was charging about mid-30s, now is high 50s, I would say, per year. I had the privilege of being a scholarship student for both my current PhD program and for my bachelor's program, so I didn't really have to pay for those. But my master's, which you'll know is a cash cow for most institutions, even with a lot of merit aid, put me under about 25. But I couldn't work as a journalist without a master's at that point. You know, know, going out into the market at 24, 25, trying to break into a major metro, everybody had a master's degree. It just was the starting bid for serious consideration. And while I would say, you know, there were economic advantages I could have taken advantage of as, say, a certified welder that went to public school in West Virginia in the late 90s, because I wanted to be a writer, because I wanted to get an education, it put me into both a higher competitive tier, but also it put me into a position where I kind of had to shrug and say, if I'm going to get to do this, my dream job, then I'm going to have to come up with $120 a month for the rest of my life to pay back that master's degree.
Yeah. And how about the PhD? Why are you going for a PhD?
Well, just because I'm a huge nerd, and I think it's important to do research, and I felt that there weren't that many media researchers who were active contributing journalists. I think, you know, it's a good thing to do, and it fulfills me, and I enjoy it. But, you know, as long as I'm in this PhD program, I'm stuck making, what, mid-20s in New York City? If I wasn't married, I wouldn't be able to do it.
Yeah, there you go. Another husband, PhD student, being supported by his wife. And maybe this call to WNYC will wind up becoming a footnote in your dissertation, or maybe you'll actually find a way to contribute to journalism through the station more. So, Phil,
maybe you'll get hire me as an intern next year, Brian.
There you go. Well, send us your stuff. Thank you very much. And God, it's, you know, it's kind of sad actually, Anya, thinking about the journalism economy, which is, you know, its own particular thing. And here's this guy working on a PhD, hoping he's going to maybe get an internship, you know, maybe next year. But it brings up the whole topic of graduate school. So often when we have these conversations, it's about the undergrad degree. What about the graduate economy?
Well, it's really, really interesting, and I actually want to point out, you know, another theme in what he said, which is that, you know, what we're really seeing is the chickens who are coming home to roost on 30 years of making purely economic arguments for the value of higher education. You know, higher education is an investment. It's something that's going to have an economic return. That's not the only thing that higher education is about. And, you know, the more that we make these economic arguments and ignore the fact that people, you know, as a society, we want people to be doing research and have advanced study, and, you know, it's something that we need to support collectively, not just individually, if we really want to have a society that continues to grow and prosper. So, you know, in a way, it's sort of these economic arguments are really one-dimensional, and the value of higher education goes so far beyond that. And I think that, you know, the graduate programs is one aspect of that.
Right. And I mentioned Peter Thiel of PayPal, his response to this argument that it's not college diplomas or degrees which are getting more valuable, it's high school diplomas that are getting less valuable. And according to New York Magazine, he commissioned a study which found, relative to the past, students who go to college do better than their peers who do not, but this is simply a mathematical result of their peers doing worse than in the 1970s. So people with only high school diplomas are going down relative to others. So he is paying a group of high achievers in high school $200,000 to skip college and just start plugging away at their own projects. What do you think of it? It's certainly not a widespread potential model, is it?
Well, it's really, really interesting, you know, and I'm going to talk to Peter next week, and I think that, first of all, I admire his sort of putting his money where his mouth is, unlike a lot of critics of higher education, but I have to say that it's not going to prove a whole lot if you take this group of incredibly talented kids, and you look at these kids, a lot of them have gone through college already in their early teens, and the ones that haven't, you know, they're all massive overachievers, and the idea that there are certain outliers who are going to be able to succeed in the world without a diploma is nothing new at all. What's really going to be necessary if we're going to, you know, alter the idea of higher education as having a monopoly on success is if you actually elevated the fortunes of people who don't have that kind of background. You know, the people that, you know, statistics show consistently that the people who benefit most from a higher education are those who are the first in their families to go to college, the children of immigrants, people who come from low-income backgrounds, and it's the college degree that really makes the difference and vaults them over the line into a solidly middle-class, upwardly mobile existence. And so, you know, if you're going to start attacking the value of a college degree, you need to demonstrate that people can succeed who don't have every other advantage in life. And that's not who these Peter Thiel fellows are.
Right. It's a really great point. Emerging class people for whom it will make a huge difference. And I guess when you look at those with just college, with just high school diplomas who are falling behind, those aren't the super talented potential high achievers. Those are people who, I mean, maybe they're potential high achievers, but these by and large are people who did not do so well in high school and for whatever reason don't, you know, don't see themselves or are not seen by others as college material.
And it's true that we have falling salaries for people who just have a high school diploma. That's a problem. That's about the decline of unions in American society. It's an entirely different conversation.
Absolutely. Jamil in Piscataway, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jamil.
Hey, good morning. How are you doing, Brian?
Good. Thanks so much for calling.
I was calling to the point of responding to the question about there being a bubble in education. I graduated undergrad in 2003 and completed a graduate degree in divinity in 2010. My wife and I have currently paid off all of our student loans, but the vast majority of my peers did not have financial assistance in undergrad. And even those that are looking at graduate degrees now are probably sitting under $80,000 or better in loans and have no job prospects or do not currently hold job positions that are matching, you know, anywhere in the realm of them paying that off anytime soon. So I have a, you know, I would say that my generation will probably have more degrees than a little bit, but will probably have so much debt that any economic value to be realized from those degrees might be like a wash.
Are you a minister?
Yes, sir.
And what your peers with the $80,000 in debt, were they also divinity students?
No, although I would say that divinity school students aren't any different. Most. You know, my parents did pay for my undergraduate education. I did receive scholarships on both counts. But, you know, the financing of my graduate education was totally on my responsibility. So that was between, you know, a full scholarship and full tuition scholarship and, you know, aggressively paying off loans.
So even though the debt is a burden for your friends, I guess the question becomes, would they actually have been better off to have no college degree and no debt? And that's not an easy question to say yes to.
Some of those friends, you know, if you heard them tell it, their parents forced them to go to school. I mean, I came from a generation that basically said, you go get a degree, you got a job waiting for you on the other end. It wasn't exactly like that.
Yeah.
It very much became more, if you have a degree in this, if you have a degree in that, if you're studying this discipline, well, we have these opportunities for you. But if you're doing something that might be more middle of the road, might be more classical, might be more liberal arts, not exactly science, mathematics.
Right.
You know, you're not, you know, if you get an MSW today, you can get an MSW and get your license, you still won't top out over, say, $60,000. But you still might be shouldering way more than that in loans before you're, you know, before you're done.
But you'll be serving a purpose because the world needs social workers.
Absolutely. You'll just be hand to mouth.
Yes.
Jamil, you have something else going on.
Thanks a lot.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And Anya, I don't know, I guess this is where we could leave it, but when we when we think of the term bubble, it does also have to do with the rising price and the perceived investment to benefit ratio. And so when you see this, I don't know if you have a stat, maybe you have a stat about what tuition plus room and board is going up by on an average basis each year. I think I saw 6% somewhere.
It's tends to be 2 to 3 times the rate of inflation. At public colleges, it's up 24% over the last 5 years.
And so, you know, it's going up faster than wages are going up afterwards.
Right.
So I don't know if at some point it catches up and for certain groups of people becomes not worth it. But certainly the sticker shock on the way in for both students and parents, however they're splitting the burden, maybe the effect of this is that some people who really should go to college are going to get the sticker shock and think, no, I'm just not going to do it.
You know, I absolutely think that's a danger, and I want to underline that this is a really important debate to be having. Even though I don't believe that higher education is at the point of being a bubble, we do need to be having this conversation about the cost and the benefit. It's no longer enough to say that college is a good investment and use that to justify charging whatever the market will bear. There needs to be a really robust and large market for affordable quality in higher education, and that's why in DAYU I talk so much about the need to actually innovate and become more efficient efficient in higher education, and for colleges no longer to be able to compete just on the amenities that they're offering, which tend to cost so much money, and actually to figure out how can we offer a high-quality education, the basics, at an affordable price. That's what the conversation needs to shift over to, because I don't think we can jettison a college education as, you know, the centerpiece. Our economy, our society continues to get more complex. The demands on people's minds are going to go up and up. We just need to figure out how to deliver the education that people need and deserve at a price that's actually affordable.
Anya Kamenetz from Fast Company, author of DIYU, and before that, Generation Debt. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brian.
And now we'll shift from taking calls from people who graduated in 1999 to 2003 and open the phones for people in the class of 2011. If you just graduated this month, we want to hear from you about how you're approaching the rest of your life. And we're going to frame it a little differently, not just around the economics of the college bubble, but we want to hear if you think you've been trained to follow your dreams or to get practical in a difficult world. And are those incompatible? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. How are you dealing with the advice that you're inevitably getting? Did the commencement speaker at your graduation, or for the usual follow your dreams, do something meaningful, find your passion kind of advice? And do you take that stuff to heart? And does it jive with the idea that you should also be practical, especially in this economy? Are those things at odds with each other? So call us up if you're in the class of 2011 and tell us, have you been trained to follow your dreams or get practical in a different world? And are those two colliding with each other for you here on virtual day one out of college? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. We'll also relate this to a provocative David Brooks column that some of you may have read in the New York Times today about what baby boomers are training their children to think as they go to college and why he thinks that's wrong. But we'll bring that up. 212-433-9692. If you're in the class of 11, have you been trained to follow your dreams or get practical in a difficult world? And are those incompatible?